Now, when you get home, on the first pamphlet at the top, write image-based. No, just on the first pamphlet. You know, the one that I handed out a month ago?
The one that's dated 5/5.
The one that's dated 5/5? No, the one that's dated 5/5 is different. The original pamphlet, the first pamphlet, is image-based. The second pamphlet that has that date 5/5 is symbol-based. Symbol-based. And then the ones that you did today, and I guess they should be stapled together as all three, magic-based. So there are three different categories of these haiku. They're all haiku, but there are three different categories: image-based, symbol-based, and magic-based. The magic-based are artistic, and you can put that in parentheses underneath it, artistic. I don't know how to spell it. Don't put a U in there.
Not artistic.
I have to tease Jerry occasionally because he has such a great sense of humor. It's wonderful. The symbol-based are magic or psychic energy, if you like. I hate to use the term psychic because it has an odd connotation in our time, although it is psychic. That's what the Greeks would call psychic. And then the image-based are symbolic. So when you get home and you write on your first pamphlet, image-based, parentheses, symbolic. The second that you got today, symbol-based, magic. And the third that you wrote today and received also today, magic-based, artistic. Now, if you took these three pamphlets of haiku and put them together as a single collection, we're taping, I guess. We're okay. If we took these three pamphlets and gave them to someone who is not in our community, all of these haiku would be considered by them on the same level. There would be really no difference between the artistic or the symbolic or the magic haiku. They would all just be haiku to them. To you, there is a possibility of a distinctiveness and a difference. And the background against which that distinction, those distinctions, plural, could be made, that background is your shared experience in the educational process. What's important is not that you're writing better haiku, not that your artistic haiku are much better than the ones that you did a month ago. That may or may not be important to you. It's subsidiary. What's important to you at this particular stage is that you be able to recognize that there is movement, that there is a difference between the symbol-based from the image-based, and a difference between from the magic-based and the symbol-based. In other words, what's being illuminated here is not the haiku, but your experience in the class, in the Saturday continuum. So it's your ability to recognize that there is a movement, there is a development going on, and the recognition is not important because of the development, but important because one recognizes there's a context that's operating. the educational continuum is itself significant and is deserving of our attentiveness. Now, in the art section, the haiku are much more important too, but when we get to history, starting in July, the other aspect is going to be much more important to you. The fact that there is a movement, a development, a continuum. That the transformational medium itself is real. That's the problem of history. Is it real? Is what we say is developing and happening, is that true? When we say something's evolving and something's progressing or et cetera, is that possible? Is that true? How do we know? And the necessary insight, the necessary thesis for the idea of history to really come into your control, into the dimensions of your effective living, is to be able to recognize that this background media of movement is real indeed. It's one of the most sophisticated of all recognitions. It's what the I Ching is about. The I Ching is not about the hexagrams. It's about change. That change is real. That's what the Tai Chi symbolizes. Symbolizes that change is real. It manifests, it occurs. It is deserving of our attention and is important to factor in to any computation, any kind of a sense of coordinate, any kind of a self-identification has to take into account this background. It is important. It is real. So that this material here will help you, I suppose now in a kind of a, if I may say so, in a kind of a naive way, it's a cutesy kind of assignment, and interesting and so forth. But in 3 months, it will become a fulcrum for you. Because when it comes time in the history section to write your own history, in this course, in this development, using all of the material that you have made throughout the year and a half, that you're basing your personal history on this chronological order of all of this material, that you be able to see that the change, the movement, the educational process is in fact recognizable. To just be able to formulate intellectually the idea of the education in terms of the objective stages is one thing, and it's difficult enough. But the true education lies in perceiving the relation between the sections and the perceptual idea that something in me is affine to this change continuum. And whatever that is really me. My real self has all of these capacities, ritual and myth and art. It has all of these capacities, but is itself something other than them. you are something other than the sum of all of your capacities. And that which you really are is quite real, is worthy of our attention, is worthy of all the attempts that one can make to recognize its presence, using a little bit of poetic language right now. That it is real, that you are real. So it's important in this sense. So these haiku assignments are quite real. Now the underside of this haiku assignment are the two mask assignments. In the ritual section where you made those two masks, mask of something that you eat, that you take in, make a part of you from outside, and a mask of a feeling that you recognize that you have, that you express frequently from the inside out. Those two masks in the ritual level are now going to be paired up with a mask of a role that you play in your life in the art section. Why is that important? Because like we talked about this morning, in the educational ecology of the movement of the deep self, art is displacing ritual. You need a new sense of mask. Because if it's effective at all, you're going to jettison the ritual comportment sensibility that you had. And you're going to adopt something different, something artistic instead of ritual. Instead of it being a feeling on a primary level or a food on a primary level, you're going to have a role on a secondary level. In other words, you're moving from food to sociology. You're moving from just some deep feeling to a consciousness of a whole pattern of relationality that outdistances a single feeling by light years. So that this mask that you're making now will have a relationship to the ritual mask in the sense that it is complementary, and that as the art mask becomes more protean in its idea, the ritual masks will subside and lose their expressive capacity that you had developed and given to them before. You'll still be able to understand them, of course, but they won't be quite as important as this other mask, the role mask, will become more important. But we're doing all of this displacing in a conscious mode. In other words, something that happens every day to everybody, you get caught up in busyness and you, sometimes you don't pay any attention to what you eat. Sometimes you even forget to eat. You get caught up in your activity, in your business, and you're forget what you're feeling in any kind of distinct way. It's all like a blur. Well, isn't that important? If you're in a business conference or you're at your work or something like that, if you have a deja vu feeling coming up, you don't have time to go into it. You're not going to go into it. Set it aside. See. What we're doing here is that we are consciously recreating this structure of displacement to see that it is indeed a structural occurrence and not just a throwaway happenstance that's a part of the blur of everyday life. This is, in fact, is a structure in consciousness and needs to be illuminated as such, needs to be understood. What's going to come out of this? The ability to range in consciousness throughout your entire psyche. To be able to, if you need to, go into the ritual comportment and understand it and analyze it in terms of its own. Because usually what happens is one takes a method of understanding appropriate to the artistic level and projects it down on the ritual level and blurs what's really happening. And your role mask so dominates the mask of feeling that it's as if the feeling never gets really consulted and enters into a condition of unconsciousness then. Well, if you keep this process up in a lifestyle, you can see that you're building up an enormous unconscious capacity, which includes very largely your feeling tones and the way in which nature comes into contact with you, so that one loses a sense of one's own nature and one's feeling tone relations, almost in direct proportion to the busyness that one has and the role that one has to play in this life. Don't bother me now, I'm too busy. That kind of a colloquial phrase. We must be free of this kind of shotgun against our capacities, which we ourselves set up. Now, it is true, if you're flying a jet plane, that you have to forget about the fact that you may have to go to the bathroom. There are those moments in life. But as a living, conscious being, you cannot afford to make this an endemic response to events. That's inviting disaster. Because it just piles up nature and your feelings in particular, especially initially nature and your feelings, against you. You're building an inner adversary as a compensation for your blockheadedness. And then, of course, to add insult to injury, we project that out on somebody else. Well, they're doing this to me. But that's not true at all. They don't have the power to do that to you. No one has the power to do that to you. As the phrase is, neither gods nor demons have the power to do that to you. Only you can do that to yourself. And only you are the keystone to a therapeia which reinstitutes the ability that when you need to be conscious in that form of bare attention, what am I in fact doing, that you have the capacity to do that. And you can stop yourself. And you can recognize, on a very conscious level, what is it that I am in fact doing? What does that then, in fact, mean? What kinds of expressive language modes are coming out of that meaning, manifesting that meaning, expressing that meaning? What is it that I'm doing? What is it that I'm saying? And that famous, wonderful phrase that Stanley Clavell used as a title of one of his books, "Must we mean what we say?" Yes. Not all the time. Sometimes you play, sometimes you throw it away, sometimes you wing it. But when you really need to, you have to be able to mean what you say. You have to be able to also recognize on a ritual level, what is it that I'm actually doing? Not what you think you're doing, what are you actually doing? I mean, the parent who strikes the child because it's supposed to discipline the child. What are you actually doing? You're actually injuring your child. If the purpose is to discipline, is injury gonna do that? Well, you can see on that kind of immediate melodramatic kind of resolution that there is an enormous food for thought issue that comes out. Maybe, maybe not. And in some cases, the immediate recognition is that breaking the arm of the child is not going to discipline the child. I'm making it melodramatic so that you can see that there are an infinite number of benefits that come from being able to be conscious on the ritual, on the natural levels. Now, most people that you will meet will be completely unconscious of nature, completely. For most people, just having some idea of nature is sufficient. A lot of ecologists are in that field. They have a wonderful, beautiful idea of nature. They're not conscious of nature as such. I mean, it's like the difference between somebody who works for the EPA and a Taoist master. There's an enormous difference. Unbelievable difference. The one functions with an idea of nature, the environment. The other functions with nature completely openly, as nature, qua nature. It's different. The difference between the Tao and the Federal Bureau of Environmental Protection is an enormous gulf. We must have the facility for ourselves to go to whatever level, whatever dimension is required for our activity. We have to be free to do that. This is a part of our freedom as human beings. And hopefully when we get to by the end of the month and by next month, you'll be able to understand that the more you help others to be free in this way, the better off you are. The only guarantee for your freedom is that others have that freedom also. There's an inherent realization that the cooperation between peoples is the only stable action in this whole realm. That's why, like in the Greek idea of the guardian spirit, they are always helpers. There are no disinterested guardian spirits. All guardian spirits are helpers. By their nature, they are all helpers. And but you can see where this goes, and I hope that you can appreciate some of the more arcane dimensions in the Saturday class. I try not to talk too much about these dimensions and about these capacities so that you don't jump to conclusions and make powerful ideas then so that those ideas dominate your experience. I would rather you have the experience, and maybe not right away, but in a couple of years, maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, because these events are all quite real. This education is quite real. And evocative of a real pattern in all of us, this will continue to work better and better, as opposed to the kind of school education that most people got that fades in memory. This increases its indelibility. Can you remember very much about your sixth grade class? You can see right away what I mean. Whereas this material, this education, the longer you live, the more it works for you. The more the consciousness engendered is there for you when you need it. You may not know that it's there, but when it comes time and there's some event and you need to participate in a certain way, this education will be there for you. Like a silent, confident companion in capacity. And you can draw out of yourself, tease out of yourself as much of it as you need, as you are required to. So in a sense, it gives you an educational data bank on which to draw. So returning back here to the haiku, You can see that the three groups, it's necessary to give them now designations. Notice the consciousness here. We're naming. We're giving designations. This is part of the artistic process. The artist has the right to name. Notice the freedom. One, in the symbolic sense, needs to know the integration name. And in the magical sense, one needs to know the secret structural name. In the artistic sense, the name that you give it is the name. That's the secret name, whatever it is. So that in art, there's this, the word has gotten a derisive connotation in our time. There's a judgment. There's a freedom of judgment. What you name it, that is its name. Regardless of its magical, esoteric, structural name, regardless of its symbolic integration name, the name that you give it, that's its name. Art is much more powerful than magic. Just like magic is much more powerful than symbols, and symbols are ever so much more powerful than myths. A symbolic mind can dominate a mythical horizon completely if trained. And a magician can play with symbolic realms till kingdom come. But an artist can bring the whole magical capacity into single expression. There's tremendous capacity. Tremendous capacity. An artist can be an artist in life for themselves, can deliver themselves, are then, as Socrates said, a midwife of ideas, but one is delivering oneself. You're pregnant with your own deep self, and this can be born out of the psyche as a whole. That person is reborn. Let's go to, we're going to take a look at a couple of sculptures, and then we're going to do these poems. Let's look at the sculptures first and catch ourselves up with this. In the box, there are two? Or there's one on the box?
Well, yeah.
We need our stool. Has Robert left? Okay, Waldir will get it. Thanks, Walter.
And then they gave to artist three this landscape, stuff with love to me. Well, thanks. Now what do I do? There's no nothing here to follow through. Well, then I looked and looked some more and thought I saw a distant shore. Was it a most mysterious land with waves and waves of golden sand? In the beginning was the word, no thoughts of mine, but some I heard. I took the play within my hand, no longer felt the golden sand. It rolled around, and then I heard, you fool, I am to be a bird. It was easy. And then I felt an inner urge to see another world emerge, where masks no longer hid from view the good, the beautiful, the you, where joy would nourish us each morn, and new creations would be born. No one need hide, and freedom's bell would ring through every nook and dell. Where would it start, this real life place, where everything will live in the race? Here, here in California, land. This place is built on golden sand. Los Angeles, city of the light. Let's place it here in plain old sight. And all who gather here today, to which one? This is a map of Los Angeles. Of course, it's the old heart.
Maybe Ed, can you show it to people around? Just hold it at waist level. Just carry it around. And some comments for Carol, if you will. The olive tree is beneath your window. Oh. She says it looks good enough to eat. More comments for Carol. What do you think, Walt?
There's
a poet.
He's showing their long fellows.
And I love your idea of a dove descending on our city.
Yeah. Oh, the light.
So it is.
One of those little things are in my hand. Very good. Why change this perfect, so I thought. Then I could remember what I had just been taught by Roger. There's nothing perfect but change in this old life. So I settle down. I stared at symbols, both perfect to see, and would know they stared back at me. I bended my ear to hear what they might say, and the answer came back as a great shining ray that felt very holy
What do you think, Don?
I don't know what I think, but I'm very moved by the symbol of the cracked head of the snake and the light streaming out there. That touches me. A strong one. Good to see you.
Instead of it being a serpent,
do you know the horns of light are a great Kabbalistic symbol? I was at a dinner a number of years ago at the house of my friend, Professor Wolf Leslau, who's retired now from UCLA. And at the dinner table was about a dozen distinguished people, professors and so forth. And on one side of me was a great professor of law at UCLA who had written a great huge tome, Professor Malenkov on law. And the woman across from him was his wife. And so I asked her, and I said, well, must be difficult to keep in balance your own comportment with someone who's just, you know, ace perfect on such a wide field as law. And she said, well, actually, it was a problem for me, but I used my time and I wrote a book. And I said, oh, you did? She said, yes, it's a book in art history. University of California Press published it. It's on the theme of the horned Moses in medieval art. And of course, the apotheosis of the horned Moses in medieval art is Michelangelo's sculpture of Moses. The horns are the horns of light coming out.
Amen.
They're not demonic horns, they're horns of light. Any other sculptures that we should look at? Why don't we call it a day then? Bring your haiku next week, all right? Let's call it a day.